You're listening to Carrie Lutz's Financial Survival Network, where you get valuable information you just can't find anywhere else. To thrive in today's trying times, you need the Financial Survival Network, now more than ever. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and get your free newsletter and gift. Financial Survival Network, now more than ever.
And welcome. You are listening to, watching the Financial Survival Network. I'm your host, Carrie Lutz. Well, you look at the employment numbers or the unemployment numbers, you see layoffs galore, all sorts of trends going on in the economy. Is it part of something bigger? Is there a larger trend at play? Well, person you're about to hear from thinks yes and explains exactly what he sees happening here, Eddie Yoon. You find him at Eddie, E-D-D-I-E, woodgrow.com. Eddie, welcome back. So, megatrends. We're no longer knowledge-based economy. We're a creator-based economy. Is that good?
I think it's wonderful for the people who take advantage of it. And I think it'll be very hard and very sad for the people who don't see it coming. And so I thought the way you've set it up, Carrie, was perfect, is that probably for, the last 50 or 60 years, we as an economy have put knowledge at the top of the pedestal, right? And as evidenced by go get your college degree, go get a graduate school degree, become an expert in something. And then, you think about the classic type of jobs that you want, and you wanted a white collar job. And yet, as we talked about the last time, the white collar recession continues. So I just noticed Twilio is laying off 1,500 employees or 17% of its workforce. Meta continues to keep laying off folks. And then now it's not just the Silicon Valley folks, but 3M. You know, there's a whole bunch of more non-digital companies that are laying folks off. And I think it speaks to, you know how this works. Like, if you become successful, one of the perks you get is to hire somebody to do your work for you. Right. And that person's not going to be as good at it as you are, but it frees up some of your time. And then when that person becomes successful, they want to hire somebody to do their work. And then you can see the quality of the work just degrades over time. And so when you hit, a bump in the road with, rates going higher and, cost of capital increasing, that the first people to go are the people who don't actually do anything but manage other people. In fact, the species that's probably the most at risk of becoming extinct is a white collar knowledge worker who manages other knowledge workers. Like, that job is going away big time.
All right. So, but can everybody be a creator? We can't just create digital content. You've got to eat. Somebody's got to harvest the crops. Somebody has to clean the bathrooms at the airport. Somebody's got to make the airplanes. So, how big a transition is this really? Is we talking marginal 10% of the workforce, or is it higher?
I think it'll be higher than that. And then who knows what the ceiling will be. But my hunch of it is one of the things we've been writing about at Category Pirates, and again, for your listeners, anyone who wants, I'm happy to give them a free, complimentary trial of the Category Pirates on our Substack. Just have to ping me at eddie@eddiewoodgrow.com. But it's this trend that we've been writing about is the way that it used to be, if you wanted to be successful, was you went from a laborer, somebody who trades, their muscles and time for money, and to become a knowledge worker, somebody who trades their knowledge and their time for money, right? And usually that came in the form of, I have an education, I have a super ding-dong degree from some famous university or whatever. I have a fancy title at a fancy company. And that said that you made it. But what's interesting is that there's really two major trends that are going on. The first is knowledge worker is not nearly as important as it used to be. And in fact, somebody who is a creator is actually far more valuable to the economy and society than somebody who merely is a knowledge worker. And the distinction being, a knowledge worker is somebody, Carrie, who I have memorized current conventional wisdom, and I've done so in a way that allows me to have some expertise in that, because I have all this memorized knowledge at my fingertips. And yet, when the conventional wisdom is no longer the case, usually as a result of creators, those are the people who tend to have all the power going forward because they create abundance. And so, so you have that trend, and I'll touch on that. And so what you're going to see is that, take fast food as an example, Carrie, right? So McDonald's, we'll use them as an example. Previously, if you were someone at McDonald's, you manage a store, you made, good amount of money. But if you're a vice president at corporate, say in marketing, you're going to make hundreds of thousands of dollars, much more so than somebody who manages a store. And then if you're the CEO of McDonald's, who Chris Kempinski, is a knowledge worker by definition. He didn't create McDonald's. He didn't start it, right? And he gets paid handsomely for that. He made about $14 million over a 3-year period from 2017 to 2019. That seems like a lot of money until you realize there's someone above him, a creator, a guy by the name of Daniel Meyer, who created Shake Shack. And he's worth $200 million in stock, right? And so you're going to see people who had aspired to, I have the VP title, I've made it. They're going to realize, no, you actually have less job security than you ever did before. Or somebody was like, I'm the CEO of McDonald's. Well, guess what? He won't be the last CEO of McDonald's. There'll be many more of him. And in fact, it's going to be harder and harder for those people to be successful. Far better to be a creator. So that's kind of the one path up. And what people will really kind of revolt around, Carrie, is that you don't need a fancy degree to be a creator. You don't need to have a prestigious resume or pedigree to be there. You just have to go and do it. And so that's kind of the one underlying trend. And it's now easier than ever to create new versus kind of manage old. The second kind of mega trend that's going on, Carrie, is the move from what I'm calling analog to digital workers. So, we talked about McDonald's. The digital version of that is DoorDash, right? So McDonald's, they have an app, but it's primarily an analog company. You order it in the restaurant, you eat it in the restaurant or in the drive-thru, or you pick it up afterwards, and that's kind of the way it works. Whereas DoorDash is a primarily digital experience. Yes, they have delivery drivers and there's physical components to it, but the way that I kind of define it is you either work for a digital company, you have a digital job function, or you can do an analog job in a digital way. But here's what's really, really interesting, Carrie, is that a manager at DoorDash makes 13% more than a manager at McDonald's. A vice president of marketing at DoorDash makes 23% more than the equivalent job at a McDonald's. And then if you imagine at the upper rank, you're like, well, Daniel Meyer made $200 million creating Shake Shack. How can anyone be better than him? If any of your listeners have heard of Mr. Beast, Jimmy Donaldson, famous YouTuber, right? He had his last company, not his entire YouTube channel, but this one part that is, he's creating a burger business that has no restaurants, that is all delivered through a DoorDash, Uber Eats or whatever, but through ghost kitchens. And that company has been valued at $1.5 billion. So you think about this world where it used to be that the path to success and, financial success and agency and all the freedoms that creators enjoy, you have to go from laborer to knowledge worker to creator. And that, it just was like musical chairs. It's harder and harder to do that. But the reality is you can go not only up, but you can go to the right. You can go from an analog laborer to a digital laborer. Like I move my muscles to make money to, I sit at home and I click on the computer to make money. And that's actually a better life than, wearing out your body, right? A digital knowledge worker will make more money than an analog knowledge worker. And similarly, a digital intellectual capitalist or creator will make more money than the analog equivalent. And so what I'm actually seeing is that there's quite a bit of abundance that's available for somebody who's actually willing to embrace the fact that there's not just one path to success, but there's many paths to success, as long as you know where you are on the chessboard and where to go next.
Okay. Well, I hear what you're saying. I'm a little bit skeptical that this is a way forward because there's a limited number of people who can actually do it. You can train. Yes, you can get it. I've been creating digital content for more than a decade now. But just because you can talk and just because you can smile into a camera and look nice and have a nice voice doesn't really give you an advantage. And when I was started in podcasting, there was less than 100,000 podcasters. Now it seems like they're breeding faster than rabbits. And, you know, I'm thinking, like, you know, the old thing was, you know, yes, a kid, what do you want to be when you grow up? And now they say, yeah, I want to be an influencer. And father says, well, hey, you know, I'm an influencer. And the kid says, so what kind of influencer are you? How many followers do you have? Guy says, well, I have your mom, I have your sister, and I have you. That's three followers. And the kid's like, you can't make any money that way. We're all influencers to some extent. And some are better at it than others. But I think there's a limit to this economic model here, Eddie. And I don't think that it really, yes, our thirst for knowledge, our thirst for growth, our thirst to become the best possible version of yourself, all of that is important. But in the end, you got to eat. And somebody's got to lock up the bad guys. Somebody's got to catch the bad guys, although they don't seem to really want to do that anymore. But, you know, it takes all kinds to make a world. And maybe through automation, less of those people will be needed, because we could just have robotic prison guards who just zap the prisoners when they're out of line. But this transition, hey, when we're all have no manual or physical labor to do, maybe all this is going to be possible. There seems to be a transition that needs to take place for this vision that you have to come to fruition.
Yeah, I mean, so what's interesting about it is that I think it all comes down to how expansive can you make your definition of what is a digital worker, right? So you're exactly right. In the classic way that most of us will think about it, it's, well, I'm an influencer on Instagram, I have a YouTube channel, I have a podcast, right? But the reality is, like, so Carrie, this framework that I laid out of, you know, it, so imagine a 2x3 framework, right? Where on the y-axis, it goes laborer, knowledge worker, intellectual capitalist. And my category pirates, brothers and sisters, we're writing a book about this actually called Intellectual Capitalist. And then on the x-axis, you have analog and digital. And I gave you the fast food example, but Carrie, I have one for doctors, lawyers, journalists, writers, musicians, accountants, teachers. What we're fighting is that there's no legacy profession that does not have a version of this where you can find abundance in your definition of it, because you don't have to be, you know, making millions or billions of dollars, but simply by moving to the right, going from the analog to the digital version of it, we're going up past the knowledge worker to creator, is that it's very different than you might think, in the sense that there's a lot of diversity of ways in which you can succeed. And that actually what is notable about this is, I assume you watched the Super Bowl or some parts of it, right?
Yeah.
Rihanna did the halftime show. My understanding, it's the first time that the halftime show was done by a billionaire. Mm-hmm. You know,
yeah,
like, well, you're not an amazingly
story there.
Yeah, you know, but it's the whole notion of, you know, she is someone who's been an amazing artist, but has also created Fenty and created Savage, you know, clothing and cosmetic lines, partnering with analog companies. So you're exactly right. The physical analog jobs, they're not going away entirely, but she is someone who has parlayed that into something that has been not only massively successful, but if you look at the kind of, musician, you know, remember, like, you and I might have said to kids or our parents, don't be a musician, you'll be a starving artist, right? But what is fascinating to me is that somebody who is a backup singer for the Warner Music Group might make $63,000, but somebody who is a YouTube cover singer who can do singing from anywhere that they want to do is going to make $80,000, right? And the same is true, a music producer on YouTube versus a music producer on Warner Music is going to make 2.5 times what that person would make. So this is the part that I find interesting, is that this is a trend that's actually not nearly as narrow. It's happening in every profession. And I'm even looking at it, like, you would think, Carrie, like, something mundane, like being a teacher, like, there's not a whole lot of variance in terms of what you get paid. But then you have somebody who, you know, the classic principal of a school district might make 80K-ish around that. I think that's the average salary that's out there, and is a knowledge worker. But the sales director for Varsity Tutors, a tutoring company, can make $300,000, right? And that the Chuck Cohn, the CEO of Varsity Tutors, some digital tutors on demand where you can find them, right, has equity in $47 million, right? It's really kind of fascinating how there is no profession, no matter how analog it is from a legacy perspective, that doesn't have a digital version or a creative version of it. And that's the part that's really, really exciting about this.
All right. I see what you're saying. I'm not sure that it's the cure to all that ails us. What about this concept that we're seeing with the chat, GPT?
Don't just survive, thrive. The Financial Survival Network.
Fury Gold Mines is a Canada-focused exploration and development company committed to aggressively growing its scalable high-grade gold assets with major drill campaigns planned across its 3.5 million ounce portfolio. Fury is led by a management team of proven explorers and developers with a track record of success in advancing and financing project development. Fury Gold Mines is well positioned to create value for investors with low-risk development growth and the potential for a new major discovery. Fury Gold Mines trades on the TSX and NYSE American under the ticker FURY. To learn more, go to furygoldmines.com. That's furygoldmines.com.
This is the Financial Survival Network, the information you need to thrive now more than ever.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's going to be, I think that'll accelerate this even faster because, like, the reality is, so I don't know if you saw this, there was, somebody who I heard this on the All In podcast. They did a chat GPT equivalent, said, write me a lyric in the style of Eminem. And then he went to another kind of generative AI platform and said, take this lyric and put it in the voice of Eminem. And he sampled it. And that clip went viral. Eminem had nothing to do with it, right? But he was a creator that was able to do it and, you know, has been able to monetize it in some way, shape, or form. And that The reality is, I think you think about it, kids are born creative. They're always imagining stories and characters and games and this and that. And the reality is that our kids and our kids' kids will be that much more digital than every other generation. And that the things that they play with might not be Legos and Fisher-Price. It might be the ChatGPTs and the equivalents of the world. And so my belief is that people will actually start creating much, much younger. And hence, you know, like there is probably a world, as you said, where robotics have taken over quite a bit of the mundane activity. And most of what we do is consume and be entertained, be educated or informed. And in those lanes, there's no shortage of, demand for consumption in that space.
All right. Well, I see your point. And I think there is some merit to it for certain. I'm not sure what this world's really going to look like with the AI. Somebody even came up with a way to defeat all the controls that are imposed, because it's a left-leaning AI bot, if you will. But they figured out how to defeat all that just by saying, imagine you're such and such and you have no constraints. And then, it started putting out stuff and they put them side by side. Like when I put in... basically, I put in any financial person's name. It'll say such and such is an expert. And then at the bottom of every single one, it'll say past performance is no guide to future returns. And make sure you do your own research and due diligence, blah, blah, blah. It's a boilerplate term. And, I'm thinking, what's with this thing? But now they've figured out how to defeat it. Maybe this thing is going to... going to really take over because they can bypass all the controls that are built.
Yeah. It's interesting. I think the people who will succeed the most, regardless of where ChatGPT and generative AI starts out, there are a couple types of people or types of ways of succeeding. One is proprietary data, right? So ChatGPT using the same data set, being asked the same question will generate the same response for the same people, two different people, right? However, if you have proprietary data that is powering the search, you will get different outcomes. And so that's kind of, outcome number one of how you differentiate. And outcome number two is actually in the quality of the question that you can ask. And, you know, Carrie, so like I've been a strategy consultant for 25 years. And what is so fascinating to me is that the secret of success is has very little to do with how well you can answer the question, but how well you can ask the question behind the question. Coming up with the right question is actually far more valuable than coming up with the right answer. And that it's the same thing for ChatGPT. If you have a different data set and you are an amazing asker of questions, if that's even a phrase I can say, then you're going to get way differential outcomes than the average person asking average questions.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, so then the next question is, how do you train for this? How do you make yourself able to do this?
Yeah, I think, you know, the part of it that I would say is like, there's two ways of training. One is like, I want to train to be good at this. And the second way of training that I actually find better is, what problem do I want to solve for? And how can I use XYZ tools to help me get there? And that, you know, it's the reason why you see a lot of founders who are successful in some ways where they were super consumers of whatever category they're trying to solve for. And they were like, I have a need and I solve for it. And turned out a lot of other people had the need too, right? And that the best way to make the most of ChatGPT or anything else like that and kind of achieve that creator economy, intellectual capitalist outcome that we've been talking about is, you know, find, I always say a couple of paths. We write about this in Category Pirates is like, find something that you're a super consumer of. There's probably money to be made there by being an expert. Like, you know, the best person to, you know, I met a bunch of folks who are like, you know, I used to ride, you know, motorcycles when I was young. Now, you know, at a place where I can get back and doing it. What do I do? Best person to ask is not a Harley dealer or somebody else, is a consumer who has many motorcycles and loves it. They're going to be the expert there. That's a person that can take their knowledge of their hobby and their super consumerness and turn that into a profession using ChatGPT or other tools like that. Like there's no shortage of opportunities in my mind.
Okay. So I just ran you through ChatGPT to see what it had to say about you. And it says, Eddie Yoon is a strategy consultant and thought leader in the consumer goods industry. He's founder of the growth strategy consulting firm Eddie Yoon Consulting. Yoon is known for his expertise in categories ranging from food and beverage to consumer electronics and toys, and has helped companies such as Coca-Cola, Samsung, and Lego grow their businesses. He's a frequent speaker at industry conferences and has written several articles. It's given a pretty good bio of you here. It says, at the end, I'll just skip to the end. Overall, if you're looking to grow your business, Yoon's work on super consumers and growth strategy may be of interest to you. So no caveats there for you, Eddie.
Well, that's kind of amazing that you were able to do that. Next time we'll do you.
I'm a lot more boring than you.
No. Well, you know, it's funny. I think what it speaks to is like, it's a better version of Google, right? Like it got most of it right. My firm is called Eddie Yoon Consulting, and you know, I've done work for Samsung and Coke, but not Lego, as an example. But like, so I got credit more than I deserve. I think what it shows is the potential of, it's not so much the first response, but the 100th response after you train it, right? So then you're saying, hey, that feedback was mostly good, correct X, Y, and Z. It's the people, almost like, you know how you can edit Wikipedia? As a community thing, the people who invest the time to train the ChatGPTs so that it is increasingly accurate will benefit the most from it. And, you know, the real goal is, you know, how do you put in some proprietary data, as I mentioned, as well as, you know, what is the right question to ask on that front?
All right. So I call myself America's top recovering attorney, you know? So you made me think, let me see what it thinks a recovering attorney is. And it's hysterical. A recovering attorney typically refers to a former lawyer who has left the practice of law and pursued a different career or calling. The term recovering suggests that the individual is in a process of recovery or transition, perhaps after feeling disillusioned or unsatisfied with the practice of law. And it goes on. Some lawyers who become recovering attorneys may have had negative experiences with the legal profession, such as burnout, ethical conflicts, or dissatisfaction with the practice of law. Others may have simply found that their interests or skills were better suited to a different field, which is, I'm the spitting, shining example of that.
That's amazing.
Isn't that funny?
That's really, really good.
So I couldn't have summed it up better myself, honestly. He's a recovering attorney. And now I can tell them, how about if I say, write an elevator pitch for a recovering attorney? I've been having fun with this. I got it. It's just like, it's unlimited. I see why Google is scared to death of this.
It should be.
They're the knowledge guys now in what you're describing. And this is a content creator.
Yes.
Oh, this is so freaking cool here. I mean, I don't even have to write my website anymore. I could just put the question, like you said, and as an attorney recovering also, it was always far more important to ask the right question.
Yes.
Than to look for the right answer. But with the proviso that, like when you're deposing somebody or you got them up on the stand, you never ask a question that you don't already know the answer.
Yes.
That's how you get destroyed. So listen to this. As a recovering attorney, I bring a unique set of skills and perspectives to my new career. With years of experience in the legal field, I have developed strong analytical, critical thinking and problem-solving abilities. I've honed my ability to communicate complex ideas in a clear and concise manner, and I've gained an in-depth understanding of the legal system and the role it plays in our society. All right, but I'm going to
change that. That's amazing.
Because I do like stand-up comedy. So I think this, Eddie, we're talking about how you can train yourself, is really a way that you can utilize technology to really become that creator.
Absolutely. You could have a stand-up comic session with yourself. You can say, you know, show me somebody, I'm going to tell this joke. Heckle me if you were a heckler in my audience and see what I got there, right? Yeah.
So I'm going to ask it to create lawyer jokes. You know that old lawyer joke? How come California has the largest number of attorneys and New Jersey has the largest number of toxic chemical dumps? New Jersey had first choice.
Y'all, I can't wait to see. This will be, you know, Carrie's stand-up comic.
As a recovering attorney, I bring a unique perspective to the world of stand-up comedy. With years of experience navigating the often crazy world of the legal profession, I have developed a sharp wit and an ability to find humor in even, it's taken its time, the most absurd situations. Hey, man, is this me or what?
That's amazing.
Hey, man, I'm telling you, I'll just let this thing do the content because it seems to be a lot smarter and funnier than I am, even though it's not trying to be.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So getting back to topic.
Creators got to create. That's the beauty.
Create. So, and use all the tools available at your disposal. But Eddie, you know, the average person, Joe Sixpack, is going to say, but I don't have enough school. I didn't get a degree. How can I create content? And to that, I would say, hey, I had to fix a toilet the other day because it had this problem, phantom flushing. All right. And that is when the toilet develops self-awareness and it just flushes because it feels like it. And man, they told me, all right, here's the problem. Here's what you got to do. So I took the easiest solution. I bought a new lapper for it. It showed me how to put it in. Of course, I bought the wrong one first at Home Depot because I didn't realize it said universal, but evidently their universe is a lot smaller than my universe because it didn't fit. So I went back, changed it. I followed this guy's instructions. Boom. The toilet no longer has phantom flush. It's now a normal toilet. It no longer has self-awareness.
Plumber GPT coming soon.
On stage, I bring my legal background to life with hilarious stories about my time in the profession. It's still working on this, man. It's really thinking this thing through for me. But man, like, hey, I can edit this now. It might not be perfectly the way I want. I'll tell you what, I'm a critical reader because I'm a writer, and it's darn hard to tell the difference between this and something that, say, a college freshman wrote for composition, you know?
Yeah, no, absolutely. The hope is that it trains us to create early enough so that, and often enough, so that it becomes easier and easier to distinguish, like, yeah, that's a first draft out of ChatGPT, but not the final draft. Like, I have no problem. Yeah. Dude uses it to get a head start on it, but put your own spin on it. That's perfect, right?
And you're not violating any copyrights. You're not plagiarizing. Nobody's claiming any rights here. Man, the internet is like a landmine of copyright, potential copyright claims. Speaking as an attorney, not even a recovering attorney, you can run into problems that you never thought were possible here. Well, Eddie, tell us again where to find you, how to connect with you on the internet, and where we go from here.
Yeah, my website is eddiewoodrow.com. But in particular, if you are interested in our writing, we have a top 10 business Substack called Category Pirates. Yeah, send me an email at eddie@eddiewoodrow.com, and I'm happy to give any reader that you want complimentary a month of Category Pirates, where we write about all of these things, including ChatGPT, but importantly, how to become a creator and an intellectual capitalist.
All right, man. Hey, if you got a question for Eddie, you can always shoot me an email, kl@carrielutz.com. And any other questions you might have, how to get onto this ChatGPT, I'm actually going to subscribe to it for $20 a month because I see the value here. But it's an amazingly powerful thing. And in the hands of the right person or somebody helping you like Eddie, it could really make a difference in your life. And make sure you go over to financialsurvivalnetwork.com, sign up for your free newsletter. Eddie, we'll talk to you again real soon.
Thanks for listening to Carrie Lutz's Financial Survival Network, your solution to today's trying times. For the latest, go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Financial Survival Network, now more than ever.